The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you once again. Your Marquette Golden Eagles are 2-0, and Phil, I would say it's mostly what we expected. You know, we expected two wins. Maybe they were closer than some people would have preferred, but I would say just an early takeaway. Yeah, they won the games, but this team had some flaws, and we saw some of those, but I think there are a lot of positives and negatives to take out of the first couple games. How'd you feel about it?
I think they showed signs of being a young, inexperienced team, yet trying to figure out who they were. They got the wins. There were some nervy moments, but I'll tell you, I'm just as enthusiastic for the Shaka era as I've ever been. And simply because, yeah, they're not going to win a ton of games this season, but I like the style and I like the approach that they've taken. Now that we've seen some real games, I'm excited for what this team produces this season.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that a little bit here on the pod, talk about those two wins. We're going to look ahead to some big games coming up, including Monday's showdown. I guess many of you will be listening to this on Monday against Illinois, and then talk about the Charleston Classic a little bit as well. So, you know, Phil, like I said, just about these first two wins, not to dive into bye wins too much, but we knew this team had flaws. We saw some of those flaws. I would say the one that did not surprise me was some maybe struggles to score the ball here at times. Really, three-point shooting left a lot to be desired. I'd say that maybe one thing that surprised me on the negative side that would be maybe the half-court defense wasn't all that good. You know, I think the pressing kept them in the games, and it was the reasons they were able to win both of those games, honestly. But those were the two, I guess, on the negative side, whereas the three-point shooting and offense in general was a little rusty, but I think that we kind of expected. Maybe half-court defense has some room to grow, though.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard to extrapolate too much from the two games, especially where one was, my God, there were 50 fouls in that Edwardsville game.
Thank God the officials are back. The officials are in midseason form. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, well, I was at the Edwardsville game. I was not at the New Hampshire game. But when I saw it was Driscoll reffing the second game, I went, oh boy, am I glad I didn't go to that second one. Officiating aside, I think it's hard to get a sense of like where this team is going to be, because there were a bunch of like young mistakes, and I'm with you. The half court defense was surprising to me. I mean, they were getting the deflections, but there's a couple of moments in both of those games where the defense was a little too turnstile-y for me. So I'm sure Shaka is going to want to shore that up, but that's going to be interesting to see how it evolves, right?
Yeah, this team has. Yeah, I think they'll get there defensively. Like I said, this is their first two games playing together, a lot of new faces. So you know, not to be all negative, because there were some things that were certainly exciting. I think top of that list was Daryl Morcel showing as an offensive player, career high in his first game as a Golden Eagle. And I'm trying to think, he was good in the second game too. Was it another career high in the second game?
Yeah, second career high. Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, 2 for 2 scoring outputs, and he was the one guy who has been outstanding from three. He's actually shooting 50% on the year. He's 6 of 12. The rest of the team is 8 of 41. Yikes, that's 19.5%.
Not good.
But trying to stay a little positive here, trying not to be all negative, they won two games. But Morcel's offensive output was encouraging, and that's really the number one reason he came to Marquette, I would think, Phil, is that he's shown he can be a great defensive player, and if that's all he wanted to show, he could have stayed at Maryland or maybe transferred to a top 25 team. But I think he wants to show pro scouts that he has ability offensively, and he's probably wasn't going to get that opportunity at Maryland, or at least not as much at Maryland or at a top 25 team. So that's why he kind of got on board with Shaka at Marquette. And I think, again, just two games in, but early on, he is showing what he can do as an offensive player, and hope to see a lot more of that.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by his offensive game, because like you said, we thought he was going to be largely a defensive stopper, and there were going to be other offensive outlets that weren't primary, but especially in the second half of that New Hampshire game, Darryl was the offense, right? And from all over the court, right? He was shooting well from three. He could get in for a layup here and there. And then, as we found, if anyone hasn't listened to the Shaka Smart Hour from this past Thursday, please go back and listen to it. But Darryl, because I'm going to reference some things, Darryl Morcel there with several Category 3 shots that went in. So that was a pretty impressive performance, and I have to say he's growing on me rapidly as a Marquette player.
Yeah, you referenced the Marquette Basketball Hour, and honestly, as fun as the games were, that was one of the more interesting Marquette basketball things of the past week for me. Was if you listen to the Marquette Basketball Hour with Steve the Homer True and Shaka Smart this past week, when Shaka was not just talking about the first game, but also talking about just kind of his philosophy, especially with regards to analytics. And you referenced a Category 3 shot, Phil. That was one of the things he talked about. They divide shots into Category 1, Category 2, and Category 3. And so Category 1 was what? Like basically paint shots, right? So those are obviously high-percentage shots, and then three-point shots, and then Category 3 was everything else?
Cat 1 was basically from 6 feet and in. Cat 2 was unguarded threes. Category 3 was guarded threes plus everything else. So jump shots from inside the arc, not well-regarded on this team, which, for the analytics would tell you, that's a true statement.
Yeah, but no, it was interesting, and I think one thing that was concerning over the last few years was the previous staff did not seem to be all that into analytics, and Shaka talking about it, and he even admitted he's not exactly an expert when it comes to analytics, but he trusts the guys who are, and Nevada Smith being his main guy in that regard. So I think that's one thing that's could be a mark of a really good leader, is you don't have to know everything, but you have to surround yourself with people who can fill in the gaps for you. And Nevada Smith is the guy who does that for Shaka. He is all about the analytics and can give him all these advanced stats and say, look, this is what this means, and this is where we're deficient, and this is where we're strong. And Shaka can look at the data and say, oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So I see how this makes sense for our team. So again, that's a really good listen, and it's really not that dated if you wanted to go back and listen to it, because I thought it was a great conversation. The other thing that from that that discussion was his talk about being in the gold and in the red on defense. Yep. And the summary of that was basically it's a really solid stat to attribute to each player as far as his impact on the game defensively. Because, impact scoring, it's easy to track. Points per game, shooting percentage, three-point percentage, turnovers are an easy stat to point to. Rebounds are an easy stat to point to. You can say, look, this is your offensive rebound percentage. This is your turnover percentage. And a player can look at that and say, oh, okay, I see what you're saying about my game and where I need to improve. But, it's tough to put numbers on defense alone and point to this and say, look, this is your stat and this is the average stat and this is why you're good or this is why you need to work on some things. And to summarize it briefly, I think what Shaka said was basically they attribute every basket made to a defender. So in other words, that's your man who scored, or maybe if you turn the ball over and the guy goes the other way and scores, or maybe you give up an offensive rebound and a guy scores, then those points are attributed to you. And the goal is to, what was it, 0.33 points per possession?
Yes.
Per minute.
Per minute.
0.33 point per minute played. And if you're 0.33 or better, you're what's called in the gold, and that's good. And if you're worse than that, you're in the red. So first of all, in the gold being good and in the red being bad, we like that as Marquette fans.
Yes.
But I think that's an interesting stat, and I, you know, I'm definitely not going to take time to calculate it myself when I'm watching these games. But to hear that he has a solid stat like that that he can bring to the players, and now the players can look at it and they get competitive about it, right? Say, right. Oh, well, I haven't been in the gold in three games. I need to be in the gold tonight. That's what we're talking about. We talk about creating a culture around defense. So now the players have a stat they can look at and be competitive about with each other, right? Say, well, right. Look, I'm third on the depth chart at my position. The two guys ahead of me are in the gold all the time, so I need to defend better. So I think that was an interesting discussion he had with Homer about how he is creating his culture of defense through stats like that.
Yeah, well, and I think it was really revealing that, like, it's not stats for the sake of stats, right? Because, like, as you mentioned, I mean, he, you know, Shaka admitted that he's not really, doesn't really care for analytics, and in fact got into a little bit of plus minus, and he likes plus minus, and Hat was, like, just aghast at plus minus, and, you know, so
yeah, Nevada Smith, you're right.
No, Nevada Smith, yeah, excuse me. I was thinking Cody Hat for some reason. But anyway, yeah, Nevada Smith thinks it's the worst thing ever, right? So there was some back and forth. But the nice thing about the metric, especially the defensive metric you described, is it's easily to articulate, this is how we calculate it, this is how we determine that metric. That metric tells you if you're defending good or bad, and now you can teach to the metric, right? Like if you're giving up offensive rebounds, we can point and say, look, this is why you're in the red zone. You gave up four offensive rebounds that lead to putbacks. Or, hey, you were gambling when you shouldn't and you had your player get by you. Or whatever it ends up being, right? And I think they get a little wonky when they start talking about, well, if you don't come over on help defense and the other guy gets beat, we're actually going to split. One point goes to one player and one point goes to the other because the help defense is supposed to be there. Or whatever. But at least you can then teach when you're breaking down game film, like, look, here's where you lost points on your gold zone. And if your help defense was quicker, if you were quicker to the ball, you'll see this metric go up and you'll see your performance go up. So it's, like you said, I think it's really interesting to get that kind of insight, you know, the very first Shaka Smart Basketball Hour. I mean, we went 7 years of the Wojo Hour without anything close to that. And in the first 42 minutes, we're getting a number of insights around how they are teaching and coaching this team. And I think that's, again, it hasn't yet shown up on the court in the terms of, hey, they're blowing out teams they should blow out. But, like, you can start to see and understand where this staff is going, and I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's cool. And stats are cool and they're helpful, but they're best when they are easily interpreted and everyone understands what they mean.
Right.
Right? Like, maybe you could look at something like offensive rating and defensive rating on KenPom, but you don't know, maybe, like, not everybody knows exactly how those are calculated, so maybe they don't really register when you put those stats in front of players and say, well, this is your KenPom defensive rating and this is your KenPom offensive rating. But like this stat that he's talking about, this points per minute allowed on defense, that's a little more, I think that's something that's easy to interpret, and a player can maybe not have much argument and say, well, if that's what I'm giving up, that's what I'm giving up. So I guess I got to be better.
Right.
So it sounds like it's a stat that I think would resonate with the players. And again, as he said, they get competitive about it, which is good. Like, so if all the guys who are in the red all the time, they know, well, I got to be better if I want to play more.
Right.
So
right.
I thought that was a pretty cool discussion. And I would guess there weren't probably a whole lot of in the gold the past couple games. I don't know if they're going to publish who's in the gold and in the red on any press releases or summaries or anything. But, you know, not that the defense was terrible, because, again, the pressing really won them the games, particularly the New Hampshire game, right? There was definitely some, you know, turnovers in that game caused by whether it was Morcell or Stevie Mitchell had a couple. That was the reason they won. So this is, you know, it's jarring to see Marquette play so differently on defense now. And, you know, I guess we'll see how power conference teams do against it as we get into the next couple weeks here. But, you know, that press did overwhelm, you know, the first two opponents, you know, New Hampshire Edwardsville.
SIU,
the first
Edwardsville,
couple games.
Yeah,
Suey. And but they did overwhelm Edwardsville and New Hampshire. So that was a big reason they won. So it was something different. And overall, it was the you know, it's not really havoc, but the pressing was really the reason they got two wins this week.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting to see, like, the other thing, speaking of turnovers, the, you know, Marquette's turnovers were generally down, especially compared to previous years, right? So they're valuing the ball more. 'Cause now, again, lesser talent in lesser teams than Marquette should be on paper anyway. But Marquette only had 9 turnovers in that New Hampshire game. Now, New Hampshire's not playing a pressing style of defense, but I guarantee you a Wojo style offense gets at least 14 or 15 turnovers in a game like that, right? So we're valuing possessions more, which they absolutely have to, because the offense, let's be honest, is struggling to succeed at times, right? They were cold for 2, 3, 4 minutes in several sequences against New Hampshire, especially, and that's, you know, that's going to come back to bite them as the competition gets tougher.
As I look at the KidPom stats again, definitely small sample size. We're going to have to use that term a lot here in the next few weeks. But something that jumped out to me, Phil, I want to get your take on. Average possession length for Marquette's offense is one of the fastest in the country. It's only, 30, I guess that's seconds, 13.2 seconds per possession.
Correct.
So I guess a lot of that may be, you know, skewed by when you're playing a press and, you know, maybe you get a steal and you go right in. That's like a 2 second, 3 second possession. But, apparently Marquette's playing pretty fast. I mean, the tempo is in. They have them in the top 70 in the country right now through two games. So they're definitely playing much faster. But the fact that they're playing faster and not turning it over, I think, is positive.
Yeah. I mean, the speed at which they're playing, and still, I mean, there are 14 turnovers against Edwardsville and 9 against New Hampshire, and the pace they're playing, that's good. So they're valuing the ball. They're generating a fair number of possessions. But the problem is that those possessions they are generating, you know, almost 50% of the time, they're not coming away from it with points. So at some point, if they start getting more buckets, like, that's when you're going to start, which sounds completely obvious. But, hey, you got to put the ball in the bucket. And if they do, they're going to start pulling away from some teams. But I just and I have to say, you've been calling it out on Twitter and whatnot, but I absolutely believe in the curse of the NBA 3-point line. There are no, especially watching the Edwardsville game live from not that far away, there were clearly at least a half a dozen times where players stopped behind the NBA line and shot it, not thinking about the difference in the lines, right? Like, it's just natural instinct for them to stop behind the last line.
Right, yeah, the first line you see. And there was a couple times where players maybe, like, took a step back. Took a step back and took that NBA 3 when their feet were already in possession to shoot the college range 3. And so maybe we're making too big a deal out of it, because I don't think this is a great through point shooting team, no matter where they're shooting it from, but it would have to be a little better, you would think, if they were, you know, a foot or so closer, right, some of these threes, and they weren't fading away or, you know, stepping back, whereas if they were had their feet set and just going straight up with it, I would hope that percentage is going to come back to something a little more normal, because obviously right now it's bad. 26.4% as a team is three. That's going to lose you a lot of games, buddy.
Yeah,
that's going to lose a lot of games.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, even I agree with you. I think there's going to be it's going to be a positive for Marquette, but there'll be some regression to the mean, right? Tyler Kolek is 0-for-8 on the season. He shot 36% at George Mason, right? So he's not incompetent at shooting the three. So, right, you know, whether it's the extra line that's throwing them off, or just, you know, playing in the Fiserv with regularity that they need to get used to. I don't know what it is necessarily, but right now, the 3-point shots are definitely not falling, and this team, you know, is taking a fairly significant number of them, so they're going to have to start falling.
Yeah, see, that's the I'm not saying the analytics are wrong, but that's the troublesome thing when your philosophy is paint and threes.
Yeah,
if you know, you know, if that's your philosophy, which is probably the right one, that means you got to shoot a bunch of threes. But if you're a 26% three-point shooting team, that means you have to get in the paint all day. And that's a lot easier said than done, especially when you start going up against Big Ten teams this week. So, yeah, the three-point shooting's got to be better if it's going to be an integral part of the offense. Now, Greg Elliott's going to be a part of it here pretty soon. Granted, he didn't take the most threes on the team last year, but he shot like 45% from three last year.
Yep.
I wouldn't expect him to shoot 45% if he's shooting 100 or more threes this year. But if he could be in the 40-ish range, he's probably going to be the top three-point shooting player on this team. So I am very anxious to get Greg back on this team and see how he can maybe bump that number up a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And, well, and I mean, having Greg on the, you know, able to play, I think, you know, makes a big difference, right? Like the New Hampshire game, you know, having Greg, you don't have to play Cam Jones in crunch time minutes when Stevie Mitchell fouls out, right? Like there's there's an extra player in the rotation that's missing as a result of whatever secret, apparently fairly significant thing Greg Elliott did, right? That he suspended for four games. So I think he produces an uplift, right? He can defend well, he can shoot the three well, he's got a lot of experience and maybe calm the nerves. And quite frankly, I'm excited to see him in a bit of a pressing defense, right? Like I think he can help turn other teams over as well. So, you know, there is hope on the horizon for more consistency on the offensive end when Greg comes back. But, you know, but he's not out there now. So we're going to get a lot of crunch time minutes from a lot of players that were playing high school ball a year ago. And so it's going to be a little uneven for a while here.
Yeah, that's the tough thing. They got two games this week against power conference teams and, well, at least two, maybe three, depending on how the bracket of the Charleston Classic shakes out. But at least two games against power conference teams, and Greg will not be available for Illinois or Ole Miss. So, yikes.
Yeah.
Might be tough. Might be a challenge. So, shall we talk about the two games a little bit? Let's, as we shift gears here, and let's look ahead to the games, because first game is going to be on Monday. I'm assuming many of you will be listening to this on Monday. That'll be Monday, November 15th at 6 p.m. Central Time on Fox Sports 1. The Illinois Fighting Illini will come to Fiserv Forum as part of the Gavitt Games. And Illinois, yeah, the good news for Marquette, they will be without Kofi Coburn. The bad news for Marquette, they are still pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Illinois, fourth in KenPom after just two games. Number one in defense.
That's not great.
So, number 14 on offense. Now, they've played Jackson State and Arkansas State. They were actually without two more of their top guards in their first game. Andre Corbello and Trent Frazier didn't play in their first game with minor injuries. They both came back in the next game and both looked pretty good. Coleman Hawkins is their best player. He's a 6'10 forward center. Number 8 overall in the very, very early KenPom Player of the Year ratings. But, Phil, this is a team that's going to give Marquette a lot of trouble. I mean, this is a preseason top 10-ish team, a team that's probably, you know, realistically talking about trying to win the Big Ten. You know, I'm sure, you know, Michigan and Michigan State and maybe Wisconsin are going to have something to say about that. But Illinois is pretty darn good. And you know, I think Brad Underwood's kind of got things rolling. And even without Kofi Coburn, this is going to be a tough one. I mean, KenPom has Illinois as a 9-point favorite in this one in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I think I, you know, if the line is 9, I'd probably take Illinois, you know, if I were wagering money on the game, right? Or pretend money, so to speak. I just like, and what'll be interesting is Illinois, like you said, Underwood is kind of reshaped his career, right? He's a fascinating case study in going, you know, I coach a certain way and then recognizing that way wasn't working and kind of readjusting to the current thinking and the error, right? He really clamped down on D, went out and got some assistance to help him with the defense and, to a certain extent, I'm not saying that Marquette is going to be a top 10 team 2 or 3 years from now, but I think Illinois is a style of team that Shaka probably would say is one he's leaning towards, right? You know, Illinois is not going to play as fast as Marquette is, but Illinois is going to try and play very strong defense, and they're going to be, you know, dunks and threes. That's their game plan. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Marquette lines up against that, if Marquette's pressure and energy turns Illinois over a little bit and rattles them, and especially in an away game. But I think it's going to be an awfully tough challenge. And we've talked about how Marquette just does not perform well in Big Ten Gavitt level games, right? Like they multiple games with double digit losses. It's just not been pretty.
The Gavitt games have not been kind to Marquette. They got one. What was it last year? They won one, right? They beat. They played Wisconsin last year. No, that wasn't a Gavitt game, though. Who am I thinking of? Who did they play last year in the Gavitt? Maybe they didn't have a Gavitt game.
No, they didn't have the Gavitt games, right? Those guys, because they all played conference games.
Yeah, they got delayed. Okay, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So I was trying to confuse, but yeah, it was 2 years ago they beat Purdue. That was 2020. That was the last Gavitt game. So we finally turned the corner on Gavitt games a couple years ago, but. Yeah, overall the Gavitt games have been rough, and this one might be rough as well. So I haven't seen a Vegas line on it yet, but KenPom is predicting a relatively comfortable Illinois win, and I'm guessing that's probably how it's going to go. But you know, first road game, weird things happen. College basketball, especially in the early season, first time teams go on the road, there could be some interesting results. We'll see. Not expecting much out of that one. But then on Thursday, that will be the first game of the Charleston Classic. They will be taking on Mississippi. So that game will be Thursday, November the 18th. That will be on 7 p.m. Central Time on ESPN2. Mississippi is 54 in KenPom. They're 2-0. They do not have a game before Charleston, so they will have the week to prepare for Marquette. I'm guessing they'll be tuned in to the Gavitt game on Monday to get a look at their opponent. Guys to watch out for Ole Miss. Louis Rodriguez, he's probably their top returning player. They have a really good transfer named Jarkel Joyner. And another really good transfer to watch for is Jamin Brakefield. He was at Duke last year. He just kind of got lost in the rotation. But he was like a top 50 guy. I think he's actually from the Milwaukee area originally. He played his prep ball at Huntington Prep. I remember him as a prospect. But again, he's just one of those, you know, if you're a top 50 prospect and you go to a place like Duke or Kentucky, you get lost in the shuffle kind of quick. Because then you've got, if you're a top 50 guy, then there's a bunch of top 10 guys starting ahead of you. And I think that's kind of what happened to Brakefield at Duke. He's a guy that may not be the most heralded player in the SEC, but he's in a position now where he's going to get the playing time that a top 50 prospect would probably expect to get in his second college season. So Brakefield, who's like a 6'8 forward, he's a guy who's going to probably be a matchup problem for Marquette. So keep an eye on Brakefield in this game. And again, this is a game where Marquette is going to be an underdog. KenPom's got this as a 3-point spread in Ole Miss's favor. Ole Miss, you know, early returns for them on KenPom also pretty good. I mean, their defense is 22nd in the nation through two games. Their offense may be a little slower coming along. But this is another game, Phil, that a tough matchup, but this is not one where I'm looking at that is absolutely 100% definitely a loss. I mean, this is a winnable game if Marquette plays well.
Yeah, I think so. I still stick with my, you know, preseason prediction that, you know, I don't think Marquette wins, but I also don't think that Marquette isn't able to win, right? Like, it's possible. I just don't think it. I don't think it likely given the matchup. But who knows, right? Maybe we'll see. Now that the team's gotten some real game action, real speed action, we'll see some more urgency and better offense out of them. They'll know what they're experiencing and able to play well against Mississippi. But, you know, to a certain extent, I think it's kind of found money, right? With, you know, we're going to get some games out of the Charleston Classic. Mississippi is a good challenge. If they can beat Mississippi, you know, maybe they're going to be a little better than we think they are. And if they don't, they're they're probably right around where we think they are. So, you know, I'm not gonna sweat it too much, but it'll be an interesting style differentiation to, you know, between Marquette's press and Mississippi seemingly wants to play a little bit more deliberately. So we'll see kind of whose scheme breaks who there.
Yeah, granted, upsets happen in these things, but you're kind of assuming if you win, you're getting West Virginia in the next round. They're a top 50 KenPom team, and they'll be a really tough team in the Big 12 this year. See our old buddy Huggy Bear.
Oh, When was the last time we faced Bob Huggins? Jay Crowder with the dancing on the Buzz's two-step?
Yeah, was that the last time Marquette played West Virginia? Was the Buzz dancing on the floor game? That might be.
I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Boy, that was a great day. Anyway, not to get off subject. But anyway, if Marquette wins that game, presumably they would play West Virginia in the next round, and then if you lose, you're playing Elon, who's ranked 200th in KenPom. So kind of a big swing in like the strength of schedule metrics there. But I don't think Marquette's really a team that's really worried about strength of schedule and resume building right now. I think they'd just rather try to play their best and maybe get some wins. But I don't know if I want to dive into the rest of the bracket too much, because who knows what they're going to play, because then their third game is going to be against one of either St. Bonaventure, Boise State, Clemson, or Temple, depending on how the rest of the bracket shakes out. So, you know, I don't know about you, Phil. I'm kind of looking at Charleston Classic, a place to definitely get one win.
Yep.
I think coming out of there with two in some way would be awesome. You know, like, let's say you lose to Mississippi, then you beat Elon, and then maybe you beat, I don't know, Temple or Boise State or something on the other side. I'm assuming Bonnies are going to be probably meeting the winner of the Marquette's bracket in the title game of the Charleston Classic. St. Bonaventure might be the best team in this thing. I don't know if they are or not, but they're a pretty good. Can I call them a mid-major team? Is that disrespectful? Or
no,
is that no?
I think that's fine. As long as you don't say it disrespectfully.
Yeah, they're a really good team. They're a top 25 team. They should be in the tournament this year. They're really good. If you can come out of this with two wins, the thing is, if one of them's Mississippi, then the rest is house money, I think, almost.
Right.
But if you come out of this thing with two wins, I think that's a pretty good week.
Well, and it's going to be an interesting schedule, right? They play – so, one, they're on the nighttime side of the bracket, right? So everyone that – you know, if regardless of what they do – Thursday, they're going to play in the evening on Friday, so that's nice. I mean, a lot of people are still working from home, so I suppose you could watch and quote-unquote work still, but it'll be nice to have those evening games and settle in with a cool beverage and see what's going on Friday. But it's also interesting that it's a Thursday, Friday, then Sunday, so there's Saturday.
Yeah, it's an off day.
Yeah, right. But that seems weird, and you know, so it's like I'm very excited about this, as if it were the Thanksgiving, you know, break games where you're kind of watching basketball all through Thanksgiving weekend. So it's a week early, but it'll be an interesting, like you said, if we can get two, that's great. I'm just excited to see this team play. I think the style so far, the takeaway in the first couple of games is interesting. And I think we've got a lot of interesting players on the roster, right?
Ready to see them against like stiffer competition,
yes.
Right? Are they going to get their doors blown off?
Yeah. Right.
Which, you know, wouldn't shock me. Certainly not against Illinois. Or this team step it up a notch and maybe shake off some rust from the first couple games and maybe surprise us with maybe a win this week that no one is expecting them to get. So,
yep, I agree.
I'm looking forward to that. How about a little take my money update?
Before we get there, I do want to ask.
Sure.
What are one or two surprises? Like, what? It's early days, but like, do you have any, like, you're surprised by this person or this thing with the team?
I'll start with the easy one. Oso looks great.
Oh God, you stole mine, but yes.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, again, that's the easy one because he looks really good. And if you tell me as we get maybe into Big East play that Oso is getting more minutes in the middle than Kirkweth, that would not be shocking to me. Again, small sample size theater, but Oso, the extra year with college level trainers and being in the weight room and You know, probably diet and the exercise that you would get as a NCAA athlete has benefited him very well, and he got healthy after he had some injury troubles last year. He had some quality bits. I think he'll take only 4 shots this year, but he's made them all. So love that, and he's holding his own defensively too. So and again, you talked earlier how Shaka doesn't love plus minus, but like Oso's plus minus like one of the best on the team. So like when he's on the floor, the team has performed better. Maybe there's some coincidences there with maybe the way other guys were performing, but Oso looks great, and I'm happy to see it because I'm sure he would have loved to have a better freshman year than he had, both in terms of minutes played and just, of course, being healthy. But, you stick with it and put the time in, and it's early results are pretty good with Oso. So I was very happy to see that and hope to see much more.
Yeah, and I mean, he's the second leading rebounder behind Justin Lewis, which, I mean, obviously I knew he would be a rebounder for this team, but, his assertiveness and his strength in the paint has been a surprise. So yeah, I would have said Oso was my number one surprise, and kind of the flip side of that, again, small sample size, I've been kind of surprised by Kerr Kwath. Like I just haven't felt it there, right? Like now maybe it was the right comp, the wrong teams or whatnot, but for a guy that's trading on, rim protection and rebounding, I think it just wasn't there the first 2 games. And so hopefully that changes. But, it certainly looks like, Oso is going to be a player that's going to earn more minutes than I originally thought. And even the minute distribution, I know both games were competitive, but in looking at the minute distribution, there were 6 players that got 20 or more minutes, or are averaging 20 or more minutes a game, right? But somebody like David Joplin's only getting 10. Amarian Ellis, only played 1 of the 2 games and got 6 minutes, right? So I think the minute distribution has been a little bit surprising that it's been so concentrated in, and who the 6 are, right? Like, I wasn't going to expect Oso to be one of the top 6 minute getters. I kind of thought Tyler Kolek would get fewer minutes than he is, but, clearly he's earned it. So I think the minutes concentration is a little bit interesting and something to keep an eye on going forward.
I'll give you another positive surprise. I was really impressed with Tyler Kolek's motor.
Yes.
I thought he was, he was disruptive on defense. I think sometimes when you're the white guy on the team, maybe we stereotype him to be just the slower guy, the slower defender. But I thought he gives great effort on defense. His passing was great. He probably didn't have the best shooting game, or really the best shooting first 2 games. He's 0-for-8 from 3, but he's going to be a better shooter from 3. But just his overall game, I thought, was really good. A little better than I thought. Take the 3-point shooting out of it, I pretty much liked everything else, both motor on defense and just the way he distributed the ball. And he looked more comfortable as a point guard than I thought he would be.
Yeah, for sure. I think he had, he's leading the team in assists right now. And he's got some very, very strong passing skills. He's generating a lot of skip passes, and eventually teams, he's kind of got that move where he gets into the lane and immediately looks to chuck it out to the corner for an open shooter, and teams will start to game plan against that. But he could, unfortunately he missed a couple of times, but he was getting to the rim a lot more than I thought, right? Like, I kind of thought he was a 3-point shooter and kind of a generic passer, but he certainly seems, like you said, more active on the defensive end and like more multi-skilled than I was anticipating. So that has also been a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, so I liked his game a lot, and hoping to see more. When that 3-point shooting comes back to the mean where it's supposed to be, I think he's going to be a really, really good player.
Yep, absolutely.
For Marquette this year and years to come. So before we get out of here, a little update on Take My Money. If you missed that in our previous podcast, we're doing a little kind of game within the game this year, and basically I'm going to set a benchmark for each game of Marquette's season, and every time they hit that benchmark, it's going to be, we'll call it 1 unit, kind of like the gamblers say, it's 1 unit. I'm going to do $10 per unit, but I'm going to donate it to the Blue and Gold Fund. You can join me if you like, and you can whatever you want, whether you want to do something small, like whether it's a dollar or 50 cents per challenge, do that. If you want to do more, great. But I'm doing 10 bucks per challenge. It was 0-2 in the first two games. So the first game I was hoping it would be a blowout. It was not. And so the challenge was that a walk-on scores. Obviously, that did not happen. And the challenge in the second game was to cover the spread. That ended up being 12.5. They did not do that. So 0-2 on Take My Money for the season. So I thought I wanted to maybe lower the bar a little bit for Take My Money, at least for the first game, so against Illinois. And so when we were kind of getting off the air last week, Phil, kind of threw out maybe the deflections thing is maybe something to shoot for. But then I listened to the Marquette Basketball Hour that you alluded to when, you know, the goal is 32 deflections. And Shaka said that when they get 32 deflections, they are 101. So essentially, if I set that as the bar for Illinois, I'm basically saying you got to beat Illinois pretty
right,
much.
Right.
I think that may be a little too high. So I'm going to do a very modest goal for the Illinois game. And it's really not asking a lot. It is going to be what has been maybe the biggest flaw in the first couple games, Phil?
It's been rebounding and offense. Three-point shooting.
Well, the three-point shooting. So I'm going to say just shoot 30% or better from three as a team. That's not even a high bar. Like 30% as a team is not like
that's
amazing.
Not good.
It's just better.
It's just better than it was.
It's just better than it's been. They're a 26.4% three-point shooting team. So I'm just saying, again, this is a pretty low bar, and they're going to be playing a really good defensive team, maybe the best defensive team in the country, at least through two games, according to KenPom, Illinois. So the Take My Money for the first game against Illinois has nothing to do with the final result. I'm just saying shoot 30% from three or better. Fair?
I think that's entirely fair. I mean, and okay, you're just begging to give your money to the Blue and Gold Fund at this point.
I mean, I feel like I should at least make a donation. I hate to get through this year and not do it once. Jeez,
right,
that'd be terrible. I'm like, I got to make some of these things reachable.
Right.
So that's the one for the Illinois game. The second one, I am going to turn it up a little bit more, and I'm going to put the 32 deflections thing on the Ole Miss game. Now, the question is, are we going to have somebody to track it? Because I am definitely not going to sit at my couch and track deflections. They have a guy. Now, Ben Steele of the Journal Sentinels, he gives updates on deflection, so I may have to rely on him, or maybe late in the game if I see the guy on the on the bench with the whiteboard with an update on deflections. So I'm going to put on the 32 deflections thing on the Ole Miss game.
Now, totally with you, and if we need to, I'll be your Huckleberry and I'll get those deflections tracked. But does it make sense? Because there's three games. Do you put the 32 deflections on all three games? So however many number of games they get 32 deflections, that is a donation. Or are we just doing Ole Miss?
I'm just going to do Ole Miss because I got another idea for game two. And I'm going to actually leave the last one up to you.
Oh, okay.
You can kind of pick it.
All right. I like it.
So the second game of the Charleston Classic, whoever it is, that's going to be the first game with Greg Elliott back. Yes?
I see.
So my thought is just simply get Greg Elliott involved. So what do you think is maybe a fair number? I'm not like asking for a career high out of Greg Elliott, but I think he should be involved in the offense. He should be shooting the ball. So what do you think? 8 points?
Literally the first number I thought of was 8. I was thinking somewhere between 8 and 10.
Yeah, I think much higher than 10 is probably asking a lot. Consider he's probably as good as he is. He's probably not going to be the number one option on offense, but he is going to be a option on offense, especially because he might be, as we said earlier, the team's best 3-point shooter. So 8 points. I mean, essentially, if he knocks down two threes and gets to the free throw line once, that should get it done. Or you know, just gets any other field goal. So I'm going to say the third game of the week. That's the second game of the Charleston Classic. Get Greg Elliott involved. I'm going to say 8 points for Greg Elliott. That's my benchmark for that game. Because I'm kind of assuming it's going to be Elon, too, because I don't know how that Ole Miss game is going to go. But so get Greg Elliott involved. So what do you think for the third game? Should we go back to deflections, just win? Or what do you like for the third when we have no idea? Or should we just put it TBA and like adjust on the fly on Sunday because we'll have Saturday to think about it?
Yeah, I think we take Saturday to speculate and plan for because then we'll know who the matchup is and can come up with something. I like something in the rebounding space, but I'm not sure what that would look like, right?
Okay, so Phil and I will tweet it at some point, either probably just right before the game tips on Sunday, whatever time it is, because we have no idea what time the game is, because if you're in the loser's bracket, it's probably going to be early. If you're in the winner's bracket, it'll probably be prime time. So maybe that's why the day off is, get everybody, or maybe somebody from the loser's bracket or somebody from the top bracket gets equal amount of rest to the team in the bottom half of the bracket. Maybe that's the reason for the day off or whatever. But anyway, so yeah, we'll game the third game of the Charleston Classic, TBA. We'll look for us on Twitter. We'll announce what it is. So to recap, take my money for this week. Setting a pretty low bar for the Illinois game. Just shoot 30% from three. And again, I'm not saying they have to shoot a lot. If they go 1 for 3, that's good enough.
Right.
Like if they're just in the paint all day, super. But so shoot 30% from three against Illinois. Ole Miss, we're going to do the deflections thing. We're going to do 32 deflections because, who knows, like Shaka said, if they get 32, they almost always win. They have, I think, did he say it was Georgia? It was like,
yeah, Georgia shot like 70% from three, he said. It was the one loss they had when getting 32 deflections.
Okay, so we're going to try to see if we can hit 32 deflections against Ole Miss. And then my, the game two of the Charleston Classic, I'm going to say get Greg Elliott involved, get him 8 points. So that those are the three take my money challenges that we're announcing so far, and we will figure out the fourth. So the third game of the Charleston Classic, we'll maybe toss that out there on Saturday, and we will probably tweet it out before the game, whatever time it is. And we'll probably pod again, probably around this time again next week. Try to get it. Basically, we record the podcast Sunday night and get them out to you on Mondays. So yeah. So I, looking at the week as a whole, Phil, I'm basically hoping to come away from it 2-2.
Yes.
That would be awesome. You know, I just get one win. Hopefully that's the, you know, worst case scenario, you got to beat Elon in the second game of the Charleston Classic, and then maybe you lose all the others. That's probably what a lot of people would expect out of Marquette this week. I'm hoping for two wins one way or the other. That'd be an awesome week, I think, for this team if they get two wins. So
yeah, I'm willing to say they get two wins this week. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but they have potential, but by the same token, if they go, well, 0-4 would be pretty bad. But if they go 1-3, like, you know, early days, we'll get there.
Yeah, 0-4 would be tough to stomach, especially because that might mean a loss to Elon.
Yeah,
because you don't want that.
Yeah, don't want that.
Of course, you know, who knows? Elon could upset West Virginia, and then you get West Virginia, you get Ole Miss, West Virginia back to back. You could have two losses pretty quick that way. So. Weird things happen this
week. Who knows? We've got a lot of basketball, though, this week to watch, which I am pumped for.
Well, yeah, that is the good news. Lots of sports to watch this week. It's lots of Marquette basketball to watch this week, and I'm excited for all of it. So hope you guys are, too, and please join us in the discussion on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. We have a Crack Sidewalks and also a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Be sure to check those out. And also we have the Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe on there. Do the same on Spotify. We appreciate those subscriptions. Makes us look good. Makes us feel good as well. So we appreciate the positive reviews and all that. And also go to cracksidewalks.com where we post the podcast there, and you can leave comments on there if that is your thing. So anything else before we get out of here, Phil?
No, I think let's just enjoy some basketball this week and see where we are next Sunday.
All right, everybody have a good week, and we will check in with you a week from now. Seashells and balloons, everybody.